Happy Sunday, everybody. My conversation at University of Washington, Seattle with lots of liberal students. So enjoy this back and forth and this dialogue. As always, you can email us freedom@charliekirk.com and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application, type in Charlie Kirk Show. And if this show has impacted you at all, become a member at members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Get involved with the most important organization in the country, Turning Point USA, at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
They are counting on your surrender. If you give up, they win. But what if we look back and we realize we were just inches away from victory, and that's when we decided to give up?
Join us and thousands of American patriots for the summer convention that all are invited to.
You're going to hear how we're going to win in 2024.
With the biggest speakers in the movement, featuring President Donald J. Trump.
We're going to fight and we're going to win.
Charlie Kirk, Vivek Ramaswamy, Governor Kristi Noem, Dr. Ben Carson, Steve Bannon, Candace Owens, Lara Trump, Senator Rick Scott, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Benny Johnson, Jack Posobiec, and more. June 14th through 16th.
2024 is our final battle.
In Detroit, Michigan.
The great silent majority is rising like never before.
Join us for the People's Convention.
This is a new ball game, everybody. You send a message. We play to win.
Register now at tpaction.com/peoples.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Sorry I'm late. Joe Bob, that was really impressive. I said, Joe Bob, I need you to buy me 5 or 10 minutes because I went out to go apologize. We had over 1,000 people outside that were not able to come where you guys are right now. So glad you guys made the cut. So I went out to go to apologize all of them. I did it just in time before the 6 Antifa people ran over to try to interrupt me doing that. So Joe Bob bought some great time. Give it up for Joe Bob. That's not easy to do. You know, it's... You have these, you kind of have some idea what you're going to, you know, say. And I say, Joe Bob, just buy me some time. So he was just going and going. I said, I half expect me to come up. And he says, that's the 47th reason I like Seattle. And number 48. So good job, Joe Bob. We really appreciate you. Great to be here, everybody. I'm not going to speak for too long. The most fun part of tonight is we just open up the mic and you guys can ask whatever you want. And disagreement goes to the front of the line and we'll stay here for quite some time until they kick us out. And so I want to talk about a couple things here in particular. I'm told that there's some sort of encampment happening on campus or something. Are you guys supportive or not supportive of that? Do you like it? No, you don't like it? No? The people have spoken, not very supportive. So look, I want to just try to do a reset on the Israel-Hamas issue. I want to talk about that. I want to try to connect it with some other themes. And then we'll just do some questions, and then we'll see what's on your mind and what you want to talk about. Nothing is off limits, and we'll have some fun. So the Israel-Hamas thing has enveloped the entire country. Obviously, we see what's happening here on campus. Passionate people on both sides. I did 3 hours today, by the way. Anyone was there today on campus? I did 3 hours out of the campus today, answering questions, meeting a lot of you guys. And I'd say that probably one out of four questions were all about the Israel issue. And I get it, because there's a lot of passion and there's a lot of misinformation about the topic. And I understand, you know, both sides. It's not the most important issue for me, but it's obviously one where I have certain opinions that derive, I guess I'm a recipient of a lot of hate because of that. I think it's first important to understand there's three questions that you need to ask about the Israel-Hamas issue. And then you must be very clear, first and foremost, who the actors are. This is not Israel-Palestine. It's not Israel-Gaza. It is Israel-Hamas. And what group stands for what? What is in their charter and declaration? What are their stated beliefs? And what have they done? So first, let's rewind the clock. On October 6th of last year, was this the most important issue at University of Washington? Now, I have to disclose something to you. Probably the most important issue on October 6th was you guys wanted to beat the Oregon Ducks the next week on October 14th. Now, This is a very sore topic for me because my whole family went to the University of Oregon and we're huge Ducks fans. And it was on my birthday on October 14th. We're right there at Husky Stadium. You guys beat the Ducks. A better team beat it twice. It's not even a question. Beat it twice. And so now I'm going to get you back. I'm here at the national runner-up University of Washington Huskies. See, now you guys are going to start throwing stuff at me. However, I am a Chicago Bears fan, so I'm super excited that Romo Dunze is coming to Chicago. We can all agree on that? Okay, all right. Someone can ask about college football if you want, but no, definitely better than the Ducks. However, on October 6th, that wasn't the number one topic here. It was a bye week. It was like, oh my goodness, Oregon's coming to town. Game day's coming to town. It's not the most important thing. No one's camping out on the lawn thinking about Israel, maybe camping out to go get a nice, you know, seat on college game day. That's it. But all of a sudden, now it's the most important thing on campus. What changed? October 7th is what changed. And I think there's been a lot of rewriting of history, a lot of whataboutism. And what happened October 7th, regardless of your own affiliation, your own beliefs on it, you must be committed to the truth and committed to what is real, is that what happened on October 7th was a dress rehearsal and was the coming attractions of a Holocaust 2.0. There is no other way to spin it, that you had people coming over from Gaza into Israel that killed 1,200 women, children, and babies. They did not go after military targets. They didn't go after tanks. They didn't go after installations that would, you know, for Air Force. They went after nurseries. They went after civilian targets. That is very important to set the moral framework, is that on the morning of October 7th, it was one of the high holy days where they celebrate the completion, Jews can celebrate the completion of reading the entire Torah, where they on Shabbat were going to celebrate one of their high holy days and they were attacked viciously. 1,200 people killed. Now, some of you might say, but Charlie, what about the XYZ amount of children murdered in Gaza? Every single child who dies is a tragedy. No one is saying otherwise. However, what started this tragic sequence of events is very important and we must be morally clear about it. And when you talk about a conflict, who started it is very important. You might say, well, Charlie, that's kind of how, you know, if you're trying to break up a fight between two fourth graders, he started it. Well, in war, that's actually very important. For example, when we were attacked on Pearl Harbor, we did not start it, but we finished it. When we were attacked on 9/11, we didn't start it. I don't know if we finished it. We got into way too many endless wars as a result of it, but it was very important. Now, there might be a fair amount of whataboutism in the question and answer line. Charlie, they've been at war for the last 50 years. They've been at war for the last 60 years. That is rubbish. They might have had adverse relations with one another for the last 40 or 50 years, but all of a sudden, when you go into another country's territory with military sophistication and planning and go into nurseries and you go into homes and kibbutzes with the intent to kill as many civilians as possible to not go after military targets, that is a declaration of war. And when you declare war and then you get really upset that the people you declared war on are better at war than you are, well, maybe you shouldn't have declared war in the first place. And I understand that is an unpopular opinion. Some people say, but they're a bigger military. They're stronger. Correct. And they knew what they were doing. When they went, they invited that massive military force upon them. So Israel was left with a couple options. You can respond kind of in a halfway, or you can treat it as what it was, which is another attempt to exterminate Jews from this planet, which no one here in this audience obviously supports or wants. Second, so the first question is, which side started it? What happened on October 6th and the day after on October 7th? If you want a ceasefire, people say, we want a ceasefire. There was a ceasefire on the 6th of October. October 7th changed that. Okay, this is a very important topic when you look at the moral equivalence. Israel is far from a perfect nation, and I am not an apologist for the Israeli government. There's a lot that they do that I do not like. There's a lot I've spoken out that I do not like. So I'm not going to apologize for everything they've done. In fact, I received a lot of flack very early on when I said it's very suspicious to me the intelligence breakdown that led to the events on October 7th, and it's one of the most fortified borders. I'm not an apologist, but I am committed to truth. And this is a very fundamental question. Which side, Israel, Hamas, has actually started and built and sustained a civilization that is closest to one that all of you enjoy? The one that you enjoy is one that respects private property rights, one that allows you to engage in commerce, one that allows you to, if you want to go to church, that's fine. If you want to protest, against me, that's perfectly fine. Which side has a form of government or a civilization that is closest to the Western form? And it's not even close. In Hamas, it is under terroristic control, the furthest thing from the Western government. In Israel, they have built a flourishing civilization and economy, and against all odds. And the final of which I don't anticipate to be very persuasive for you, but it is for me, and I think it's very important. The third question, which side has supporters that the more you hear from them and the more you see them, the less likely you are to be sympathetic with their cause? And well, what do you mean? You go look at the people that have filled that encampment. You say, whatever they're protesting for, I'm against. Like, I by definition, like, they haven't showered in 3 weeks. They're constantly screaming at me. They mobilize with, umbrellas. Like, we're going to come and put, umbrellas in your face. Like, okay, whatever you're advocating, you're the very same people that called what happened in the summer of 2020 a mostly peaceful uprising during the riots of Floydapalooza, when we decided to destroy our country because of a lie from hell, a bitter lie from hell that we're systemically racist, which of course our country is not. We're the least racist country in the history of the world. Which side has supporters that actually want to uphold civilization, and which side has supporters that actually want to de-civilize our country? And this is what is so important, is that the very same people that are doing the encampment right now, no matter what the cause is, they would be out there. If it's against the power system, if it is against civilization, if it's against our code and custom, they would get very angry. If it's transphobia, if it's systemic racism, if it is Hamas, if it is gun control, maybe it's not as much about Israel and Hamas, and maybe it's more about these are deeply unhappy people that find meaning and purpose in trying to tear down the United States of America, a country that we cherish and enjoy. How about you go get a job and stop complaining all the time and start immerse yourself into society and build something useful? And there's a lot in common here between the Floyd riots that we saw, from attacking police, from trying to take over territory or ground that is not yours. Again, if you're engaging in speech on the encampment, fine. Are you breaking school policy? Some people say yes or not. I don't want to spend too much time on that. What I am saying, though, is what, for whatever reason, a foreign conflict for them necessitates like a civil rights era type response. Why exactly is that? It's because if you complain more than you produce, you're typically on the left. And if you produce more than you complain, you're typically on the right. Because of that, we have seen this pattern time and time again, that those that are willing to take to the streets and are willing to destroy and get engaged in very nasty tactics, we must remind ourselves that there is a reason for it. Because the enemy is not necessarily even Israel. The enemy is not even America. The enemy is our way of life. It is freedom of speech. It's the Constitution. It's the fruits that we enjoy fundamentally. And it is a de-civilization movement. And what do they want? It's not actually even clear. But they want to destroy what already is. And I think that's what separates what many of you believe here tonight from the forces that you've been seeing outside. Which is, if you go through those three questions, it is very, very important to emphasize that it is hard, nearly impossible, to build the country that you've grown up in. You are growing up, and it's less and less the case, a wealthy country, a decent country, a country that affords you opportunity. Why is it that so few countries have been able to replicate what we have here in the United States of America? Is it because we have better founding documents? Our founding documents are pretty awesome, but other countries have tried, and just because you have a good constitution doesn't mean you have a great country. Just ask Liberia. Is it because we have a lot of natural resources? We do have a lot of natural resources, but that's not the reason why we're wealthy and powerful. Russia has a lot of natural resources, and they're 1/30th as rich as we are, despite being 1/3 the size of we are. 1/30th as rich, 1/3 the size. Tons of natural gas, tons of natural resources. Is it because we have the most people? Well, we don't have the most people. India is quadruple the population of America, and they have a GDP per capita around $800 per person. In India, there are 600 million people without running water or toilets in India. And for them, that's actually a number that has gone down. It used to be 750 million, and it's now gone to 600 million. What is it that makes this country so unique? It is our values that make us unique. And the fundamental American value that needs to be repeated to every young person in this country is that this country is not nearly as bad as you've been taught. It's actually better than you've ever believed. And if you work hard and play by the rules, you can make something magnificent of your life. And at the fundamental core of all that is gratitude. How many of the people that are protesting endlessly and screaming at the sky are filled with gratitude, or are they filled with ingratitude? Gratitude requires, first and foremost, recognizing that you are not the most important thing ever to exist in the history of the world. If I were to venture a guess tonight, the majority of you believe two things: that there is a God and you are not him. Those two things are critically important, because believing those things will then make you realize that you have somebody, something to be grateful for. Secondly, and I must end on this point, then we'll do question and answer. It is not a leap in my belief that Seattle, being the most atheist city in America, happens to be the hotbed of some of the most radical activity in this country. You might say, Charlie, that's a causational correlation. It's not that man fails to believe in God. It's who does he call God? There is no such thing as an atheist. There's just somebody who has replaced the traditional belief in the biblical God with the God of LGBT, or the God of earth worship, or the God of anti-racism, or the God of I want to protest because I'm so bored and tired of smoking weed and playing video games all day long. Whatever you call God is what you will dominate. In fact, dare I say, the God of Seattle life is much closer to a pagan belief system than an atheistic belief system, which is that there are symbols, there are incantations, there are parades that make you feel as if you're important and part of something. My belief system is that the death of the ethical monotheistic God, which I believe is the God of the Bible, the founding fathers agreed, but we don't have to talk deeply about that if you don't want to, is also the death of the West. Who are you to say what is good or what is evil if you cannot tell me what good and evil actually is, and if that is transcendent or not? If it is everybody's personal opinion, then all that matters is power. If up or down, right or left, good and evil are merely an opinion, then it matters who is actually issuing the opinion. What made America different, that value system that I've articulated, is a Christian value system that we can call a Western value system, that if you believe that there is a God and you are not him, and that God has commanded you to live a certain way. The best way I could distill this, and I know this is probably the least popular thing you could say on a college campus, so I will repeat it for clarity to make sure you remember it, is that if you live by the Ten Commandments, your society will flourish. If you do not live by the Ten Commandments, your society will collapse. You'll have no other gods before me. You shall not make any graven images. You shall not take the Lord's name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day and to keep it holy. Honor your mother and father so I may live long in the land of which you are in. Do not steal. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not covet. And the tenth, I can't remember. Someone can fill it in for me. But I might have repeated one. That's not bad, though. 9 out of 10 is not bad. Thank you, though. I was just from memory. So I said covet, murder, steal, adultery. Bear false witness. Thank you. Do not lie. Thank you very much. Do not bear false witness. There you go. Thank you very much. If you live by the Ten Commandments and you believe that there is a God that has issued those Ten Commandments to you, and you believe that they are transcendent outside of your own opinion, you will act differently. I don't believe this will be awfully persuasive for many of you, but I believe it's important to say that you are about to see the excesses of secularism in this modern era, and you are living through it. You are living through the most depressed, suicidal, anxious, alcohol-addicted generation in history. A generation that has been told that God is not cool, go pursue your own truth. And it is a catastrophe. It's a catastrophe of kids that are looking for meaning, that do not know what is right or wrong. And what I am arguing for you is when you do that, you have moral chaos. Be very careful crashing down the gods of yesterday or the God of yesterday and saying, I don't need that. What you are living through is that moral chaos. And I would love someone to go up to the open mic and tell me by what code of conduct you guys can live under or comes from that is proven to have a flourishing, prosperous society that is better than the one that I have just articulated. Because we know that the one that I've articulated, it doesn't just work for one people, but for all people. So in closing, I'll just say this, is that I am so encouraged by what we see tonight. We could not find a room big enough to fit all of the students that want to hear from this message here at the University of Washington. We had to turn away over 1,000 people. This is remarkable because if you look at the polling, Gen Z men are the most conservative that they have been in the last 50 years. Why is that the case? Because for all of you 18, 19, and 20-year-old men out there in the audience, you are sick and tired of being told that every problem in the world is because of you. Is that just because you are a young man, and specifically a young white man, that you have to apologize when you walk into the room? That you have to apologize for quote-unquote rape culture and being toxically masculine? That if you might use the wrong pronoun, which is the stupidest thing ever, got to get rid of all pronouns, by the way. The pronoun thing is so dumb. And it's unnecessary, by the way. You know, there was a world that existed before this pronoun stuff, and it was pretty awesome. And it is totalitarian, just so we're clear. It's totalitarian. If you don't use the right pronoun, I'm going to punish you. Young men especially, they want their country back. They want to be able to own property, get married, have children, not have to live under the fear that if they do not say the right thing, the HR manager might walk into their office and obliterate their career. They want to be able to say it's a good thing that we have men in society, that we need strong men to defeat evil in this society. And there is only one place where that sort of a message is resonating. And it certainly is not on the American left. On the American left is where androgynous beta males find a home, where they're able to, you know, complain about their feelings all day long. You guys can do that while the ascendant men in this country that are serious about their future, serious about fighting evil, join the conservative movement in record numbers to go build a country worth living in and to reject the forces that have been destroying it from within. Let's do some questions. God bless you guys, and we'll do an open mic. Thank you. Okay, so this will be the question line. So let me go through some ground rules, guys. Couple things. If you disagree, we will make sure you guys come to the front of the line. Secondly, this is a majority conservative audience. Yes? I could sense it. If a left winger comes up to the microphone and says something silly, do not mock them. Do not laugh at them. Do not interrupt them. Show the liberals here tonight the respect they never give us conservatives on campus. Okay? All right.
All right. Hi, Charlie. What inspired you to become such a passionate advocate for conservative values, and how do you see those values positively impacting society?
Yeah, I started Turning Point USA when I was right out of high school. I didn't go to college. I know someone might use that against me later on. I fully own it. I think college is largely a scam. Sorry, guys, but a lot of you guys are being scammed. And yeah, look, I got to work. And so I've been doing this for 11 years. I took a gap year. It's been 11 gap years, and worked out well for me. And I love this country, and the way I'm wired and the way I hope many of you are wired is I will not sit idly by when something beautiful and God-given is destroyed in front of me. I'm going to do everything I possibly can with the power that God gave me to try to make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I just had a quick question. Do you see any hope in Gen Z in terms of like long, healthy, lasting relationships? Like, for example, like a rise in marriage rates or like possibly a decrease in hookup culture?
I sure hope so. Hookup culture is one of the most destructive trends. I mean, obviously on college campuses, it's kind of the home of hookup culture. I sure hope, first and foremost, if I build up the young men in this audience, I hope young men stop watching pornography and get away from that spiral of addiction. I hope young ladies will open up and entertain the idea of getting married at younger ages and not prioritizing their career. See, not as much applause for that one, because everyone will applaud the anti-male sentiment. Yeah, stop watching porn. How about getting married early? No, I want to go become a... There you go, right? I said entertain. Everyone makes their own decisions, but I think we could largely agree the trend has not been very promising. I sure hope so. Both men and women have to change the way that they engage in the dating pool. Men have to stop looking at women as just potential orgasms and objects, and women have to value themselves enough to be able to say no to the men that just want to use them as objects, and in fact, it actually makes them more attractive to men when they say no to men that look that way. You might say, Charlie, that's just a bad way to categorize men. Well, it's quite honestly true. If you look at the baseline of hookup culture, that is kind of the truth of it. Look, we all have natures given to us by God, okay? So the best possible way I could summarize this, and social media and pornography, online pornography, have been the two worst ways to basically address this. Men desire lots of sexual attention and satisfaction almost constantly. So pornography has, quote unquote, filled that void. Women, they desire community and attention almost relentlessly. And social media has filled that void. So instead of actually having intimate personal relationships, we've gone digital in both areas, and we have seen a widespread deterioration of customs and norms because of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Firstly, just want to thank DEI got me here. The only furry here, so I think that's why they put me through the line, so thank you. two things. I have, actually, the woke mind virus right here. No, it's not like COVID. It doesn't require masks, shutdowns, closing the economy. It only lasts 2 hours. If you would like to take it, 30 minutes, I think we'll have a very lively conversation. This is some pretty good stuff. But if you don't, that's completely fine. My question, I don't want to waste anyone more time.
Did you expect that to be funny?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, no, I guess it was not. So funny the audience forgot to laugh.
Ah, Charlie, you're a very attractive man. And
I didn't hear it.
But my question today is your take on single motherhood in this country. You recognize that African Americans are disproportionately committing more crimes, right? And they take up a larger percentage of our prisons, or 40%, well, maybe only 13% of the population. And then you attribute that, I think you said, to the culture and then single motherhood in the country starting from the 1960s. My question to you is, why did it affect specifically African Americans as opposed to other races? Because other races can also get married. So why specifically African Americans?
It's a good question. Not totally sure. I mean, a working hypothesis, according to Thomas Sowell, is culture. Is that there was a cultural breakdown in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s where paired with government programs and subsidizing single motherhood, we saw a breakdown of the black family. And unfortunately, that has continued, where the norms in black America are no longer that the man has to stay alongside the woman that he impregnates, and that 3 out of 4 young black kids in this country are not raised alongside of a stable father in the home. So we don't know exactly the answer, but culture is probably a good explanation.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Anytime.
Hi. First of all, as an Israeli, I wanted to thank you in the last 6 months for advocating for my country's right to exist, and I really appreciate that. One thing is, in my home country, we do have, you know, our own civil internal problems of some religious extremism. We have like a lot of ultra-Orthodox Haredi religious people who aren't serving in the military and still taking money from the government. When you talk about like the Ten Commandments being a framework, I guess when you think about other in public intellectuals, maybe on the left, like Sam Harris, that advocate for some kind of secular humanism and mindfulness and don't advocate for the crazy stuff we see 100 feet outside of our window, why do you think there's a flaw in non-religious kind of secular humanistic philosophy?
It's an excellent question, because it was made by man, not by the divine. And so in order for the Ten Commandments to work, you must believe that there's an element of something transcendent that either wrote it, that delivered it, or that was behind it. The Ten Commandments lose its potency if they're just 10 suggestions for life by some PhD. they no longer, the Ten Commandments worked to build Western society because you had a population that believed that if they didn't follow the Ten Commandments, that God would judge them and that God wanted them to live that way. And so if Sam Harris, who is allegedly a public intellectual and all this, he's very smart, but I think his ideas are silly. He's trying to solve the religious problem with a quasi-religious solution without ever actually getting to the baseline of this. And this is something that even the atheists in this room will hopefully end up believing in, which is this, is that before I persuade you on the existence of God, I bet I can get you closer to the idea of the necessity of believing in a God. And then if you do not believe in a God that is transcendent above you, how do you act? Where do you know what is right or wrong, or good or evil? And before you say it's just built into me, that's complete rubbish. We know that. You can visit country after country in the third world of how they treat children, of how they treat women. It is not natural to do what we've done here in the West. You think it's natural because you've been raised in a Western construct. And so when the population looks at the Ten Commandments, for example, and they just look at it as like some nice life advice or some good ideas, it loses its zing or its spice to be able to actually put a population back towards ethical behavior. Thank you.
Hello, Charlie. Hope you've enjoyed your stay in Seattle so far.
It's wonderful.
I'm glad. Hi, everyone, and happy to be here in my hoodie I got straight from the Joe Biden reelection campaign. So I wanted to ask about, so when we look at all the countries in the world, we generally see that the conservative backwards countries exist mostly in the third world. I guess my question is, why do countries like the Western countries, which support LGBTQ, support women's rights, support just liberal policies, why do those tend to thrive over the backwards conservative ones?
Well, you got to be more specific. Well, first of all, the LGBTQ thing is a recent phenomenon that is actually destroying these countries. It's not what made them thrive or flourish. So let's get into some examples. Do you mean like France, Italy, Norway, Sweden, Finland?
Yeah, all the Western ones that are thriving based on their...
You think France is thriving?
Oh, yeah, based on like their standing in the world, the presence they have, the GDP of their country. Okay. Yeah, I think they're doing a lot better than places like Iran, Iraq, places that subjugate women.
Okay, well, I'm obviously not a fan of... If you want to get into Islam, that's something... So you're conflating Islam with conservatism, which is interesting.
There's plenty of Christians in the Middle East.
Right, they're a vast minority, like less than 5% of the population in the Middle East.
Not in every country. There's significant Christian populations all over Africa and the Middle East.
Well, that's less than 15% in Egypt, Coptic Christian. What is it? Can you name one Christian majority country in the Middle East besides Armenia?
I don't know about majority, but I know that several have a very large Christian bloc. I don't know if it's necessarily the majority. Yeah, it might be a plurality.
Okay.
But
we're kind of losing the script a little bit, but I just want to be clear. Christians in the Middle East don't mutilate their women. The Muslims in the Middle East mutilate their women. So let's just be very clear. So you're conflating Islam and conservatism. And so I just want to make sure I understand your argument. Do you think that LGBTQIA+, which, by the way, you're a bigot for not having the IA+ in there, so just to be clear.
No,
so
I apologize.
You're behind on the revolution?
I don't mean to offend you, by the way. Sorry.
Well, not offending me. You're offending the high priestesses of wokeism for not getting the...
Oh, I see.
Right?
Yeah.
LGBTQIA+. Mm-hmm. Right? And by the way, the new flag is not just the triangle, it's also a circle. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Man, you got to be up to date, because what is the rule of modern wokeism? The revolution is never over. Constantly updating, constantly expanding. Okay, so anyway, so I just want to make sure I understand. Let's talk about Japan. Japan is one of the most conservative countries in the world. Super low immigration. And they don't have any of this like LGBT nonsense. Why are they so wealthy?
They're wealthy because they allow people like women to get into the workplace and have protections for their workers so that...
Again, I'm not against any of that, but I want to talk about... Can you tell me why the LGBTQIA+ equals wealth?
Well, I'm not saying it necessarily equals wealth. I'm just saying that the liberal ideologies that dominate in Western countries and in places that tend to have a dominant place in the world, like the United States... Why do places that prioritize diversity and inclusion of all people, like, they seem to be able to dominate countries that are highly restrictive and
right.
theocracies?
So you're conflating a couple things here. What you're talking about is a free market inheritance that Western countries received, and then they've plastered on this LGBTQ LGBTQI plus nonsense on top of a multi-decade free market inheritance that gave them these multi-trillion dollar economies, and they say, oh, we're rich because of the gay flag. No, you're rich because of private property rights and the Western tradition for the rule of law and separation of powers and free market capitalism. That's why you're rich. You're not rich because of diversity so, standards.
As a liberal capitalist, I don't disagree with any of your points. So,
I'm sorry?
I don't disagree. I'm a capitalist just
okay,
like
great.
You are.
So, but let's zero in on diversity. Can you give me a single example of a company, a college, or institution that has prioritized diversity and has not sacrificed excellence?
Oh, like you could look at the most valuable country or companies in our country, actually, that have explicit diversity and inclusion policies. They
like,
seem to be
like
doing
Boeing.
Pretty well. That's not one of the most valuable companies in the
it's
U.S.
It's worth a couple hundred billion dollars. So let's think about Boeing.
Oh, look at woke
Google,
actually.
Hold on. Let's
actually.
Talk about Boeing's a local phenomenon here. When your airplane is being made, do you want a qualified mechanic from Boeing or a black mechanic from Boeing that might have been accepted for lower standards?
I'm not in favor of lowering standards to include...
Excellent. So you're against affirmative action. Because affirmative action, by definition, is the lowering of standards to accelerate and prioritize diversity.
It is not the lowering of standards to
prioritize
diversity.
Hold on. Every example of diversity, equity, inclusion, from Harvard to Goldman Sachs to Boeing to Stanford, is that you do need to relax and lower the standards.
Absolutely not.
Yes, you do.
It's not.
There is not a single example. In Harvard, for example, they had to lower the SAT quota by 200 to 300 points per racial demographic for Asians and whites comparable to black application students. We know this because of the Supreme Court case that came out of it. But I just want to make sure that I'm clear. Why does it matter, though, to advance the melanin content in certain people's skin more than saying we are going to have a colorblind, excellent-driven, merit-based practice? What is the push of diversity matter so much?
So I don't know who you're debating because I didn't advocate for any of that, actually. So
well, no, you did. Hold on. Let's not rewrite the script. You came up here and said that the countries that embrace diversity, equity, inclusion,
yes.
diversity, and LGBTQ+, are mm-hmm. the wealthiest and the greatest. So don't
exactly.
try to reverse history here. I'm asking you why, then, you are talking favorably of diversity while you could instead say we should
sure.
stop doing that and instead talk favorably about why these countries are rich in the first place, which is a merit-based, excellence-driven belief system, not a diverse one.
You're responding to a completely different question I didn't ask. So I'm not in favor of lowering standards. I am in favor of promoting people that generally don't, like people of different backgrounds that generally don't find themselves in certain industries. I'm in favor of promoting them to be able to compete in those marketplaces.
That's by definition lowering standards because it wouldn't be... here's the answer, is that if you didn't have to have a whole new program, then you just allow the hiring to continue and they would hire whoever the best person for the job is. The whole idea of diversity, equity, inclusion is that we have to change the criteria because we're not hitting some sort of abstract diversity goal because the computer science department isn't black enough or some nonsense. Or Microsoft needs more, you know, lesbian women, you know, coding for them or something. It's ridiculous. And here's you asked a very specific question. I'll give you a specific answer here at the end. You said, why is it that Western countries are so much richer than their totalitarian counterparts in other parts? It's because in the rules-based World War II order, we didn't have this DEI nonsense for the last 50 or 60 years. And we've built this treasure chest of wealth and prosperity that is now being plundered by the DEI commissars of the West that are now spending down our inheritance with terrible ideas. And when that money runs out, when all of a sudden that wealth disappears, it's not LGBTQI plus that is going to build the next Google, Goldman Sachs, Microsoft, Starbucks, or Boeing. It is colorblind, merit-based hiring practices that build beautiful and excellent things. Thank you so much.
I don't know who you're debating against. I don't know who you're talking to.
Thank
you're not talking to me.
No, but I am. I already answered your
no,
question.
No, you didn't.
You're all. Thank you very much. Next question. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. So my question is, you support Christian values, as do I. How do you support a man who, in many ways, is the antithesis of those values in Donald Trump?
Well, I thought you were going to say Joe Biden.
What? Well, you've supported Trump in the primaries, too.
Yeah.
So there was other options at that point.
Well, yeah, so you're asking why do I support a sinner?
Why do you support someone who...
Because you're obviously not a sinner, right?
No, I'm a sinner, but his whole life and his values are all the antithesis of what the Ten Commandments are and things like that.
Okay, so I'm not even sure what to make of that. Let's just look at his presidency. I mean, was he not an excellent president? Do you disagree?
Well, I believe that character matters in our leaders.
I do too. So actually, here's my number one mark of character for a politician. Did you do what you say you were going to do? And Donald Trump did what he said he was going to do.
I'm sorry, do we have a wall across the whole southern border right now?
Well, we built a couple hundred miles of border wall.
But he said he was going to build a full wall.
Right. There were limitations for that. He shut down the government for 60 days over that.
You.
Hold on a second.
Wait, who is you?
I'm sorry?
You said you shut down the government. Well, who is you?
Donald Trump shut down the government for 60 days to try to get $4 billion in border wall funding. He put Schumer and Pelosi in his office. He did everything at his disposal while he was facing two impeachments and one ridiculous special counsel investigation. Southern border crossings went down to a 30-year low under Donald Trump. We had asylum seekers that were rejected back to their country of origin. You can nitpick certain things from the right to say, oh, I could have, would have, and should have. But let's go through the promises. Number one, Donald Trump gave us and fulfilled the promise, three excellent Supreme Court justices, so that we had the reversal of Roe versus Wade. As a Christian, will you give him credit for that?
I give him credit, but are you saying any other Republican president would have done the same thing?
George W. Bush gave us a liberal Supreme Court justice.
John Roberts
voted against us on critical issue
on
after critical.
Besides Obamacare.
Roe versus Wade.
He was against us on
it
Roe
v. Wade. It was a 5-4 decision, I believe. I could be incorrect.
I thought it was 6-3, but I may be wrong.
You might be right on that. I don't want to speak out of turn. However, he voted against on many of the other issues recently. By the way, Roberts is very liberal, okay? So, secondly, George H.W. Bush gave us Kennedy, Anthony Kennedy. It might have been Reagan. Either Reagan or Bush gave us Kennedy.
They wouldn't have been elected in 2016. If you had Ted Cruz, if you had Marco Rubio, they would have given us three people that match Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Coney Barrett.
Bush gave us liberal tilt justices. That's number one. But let me just ask a question. George W. Bush, did he ever speak at the March for Life?
I'm not aware of that.
No, he didn't, because he was a pro-abortion Republican, because his wife was pro-abortion.
Well, Trump can't even sort out his own take on abortion now.
Hold on a sec. You keep on changing the script here. You came here as a question, is how can I, as a Christian, support a sinner? We all agree we're all sinners.
Other candidates who probably have better character in the primaries, like Ron DeSantis.
What do you mean by character exactly?
Like not having a history of adultery, not having a history of immorality, mocking Mike Pence for praying in the White House.
So you believe that anyone that has wrongfully cheated on their wife should be disqualified from leadership, public office, all that stuff, yes? So your standards are higher than God's when King David became king over Israel, just
so we're
clear.
When they haven't shown the proper remorse for those actions.
Okay, well, you don't know what remorse he has shown or has not shown. But secondly, I'm not going to get into like the deep thicket here of defending Donald Trump's personal life, because we're in a binary right now. And the binary is very simple. Instead of moralizing against a man who is facing 700 years in federal prison for trying to put the American citizen first, I think we as Christians should get on our hands and knees and thank God that we have a fighter that is willing to actually go to D.C. and fight for us against that very regime.
So hold on a second.
You say, how can I as a Christian? But I look at Samson. I look at David. I look at sinners throughout the Bible that were used for God's purposes. Do you recognize that?
Yeah, but are you saying that sinners are better than people who have less sins? Because if you looked at someone, just for example, like Ron DeSantis, who has, in my opinion, a much better character than Donald Trump. Are you saying that he wouldn't have gone to D.C. and fought for the values that you're saying Trump would fight for?
So I didn't support DeSantis. I like DeSantis. But let's talk about character. By all objective measurements, George W. Bush had better character than Trump. Loyally married, never accused of adultery, Christian. He gave us the Iraq War. He gave us the Afghan War.
I mean, you could point to one person.
Hold on. I'm talking about the only other Republican president of the 21st century, not one other person. Want me to point to his father, H.W. Bush?
What about Reagan?
Reagan is not as good of a president as Donald Trump. Reagan gave us no-fault divorce, mass amnesty. Reagan also expanded the national security state. Reagan was a fine president, but nowhere near as an effective of Donald Trump president. So that's the question ahead of us, which is, if you only look at character, which is your version of character, I don't share that version of character. It's, does the politician do what he says he's going to do? And he did what he said he was going to do.
Well, he did that in
abundant terms.
Well, he did some of the things he said he would do.
So let's get to another one. Blessed are the peacemakers. You and I as Christians both believe that, right? How many new wars were started under Donald Trump?
But zero were started under Jimmy Carter also. I mean, is that's not really...
Hold on. We're talking... Yeah, you're right. And Zero were started under, like, I don't know, William Buchanan or something. I don't know. Like, you can go way back into the presidential register here. I'm not advocating for Jimmy Carter's presidency from hospice, okay? It's a very simple question, which is, in the modern era, from Clinton to Bush to Obama to Trump to Biden, those are five presidents, okay? Only one of those five did not start a new international reckless adventurous war in any theater, and that guy is named Donald Trump. That for me is like a decision. It's like a massive, massive issue, especially when you look at the carnage and the funding. I mean, you don't want war. You're a Christian.
No, I'm not saying everything Trump did was bad.
Fair enough. Okay, but so let me ask you a question. I mean this sincerely. Is there anything he can do to win you over?
I mean, I'll probably end up voting for him just because I don't like the other side. But I would have much rather preferred someone else from the primaries.
Fair enough. I think you're coming after this from a fair perspective. But I would challenge you not to just throw around...
I like RFK, though. I might vote for him.
Okay. Well, then you're going to vote for a pro-abortion, you know, pro-choice guy who would put radical left-wingers on a Supreme Court that would never win. But it's fine. You live in Washington, so your vote doesn't matter that much anyway. But it's true. I mean, it's unfortunately a super left-wing state. But... And just so we're clear, RFK is also an adulterer. I don't know if you've looked into that. So if your criteria is kind of falling apart. So I will just emphasize this, which is, as a Christian, it is tempting to try to impart our disciplined moral walk on every single politician that runs for office. I totally get that. Instead, I take a step back and I say, who has actually done the things to fulfill the policy agenda that I think glorifies God? And that is Donald Trump. It's not even close. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Firstly, as a liberal, I would like to say I'm shaking right now and I'm coming with respect because I do not want to end up on a highlight reel. And I also am intimidated as I think you are very beautiful. It is my belief, correct me if I'm wrong, that you are not completely against immigration as long as the people coming here share the values present in this country. That being said, don't you believe we have a duty to take in Muslim refugees who oftentimes have different values than ours? As we have directly or indirectly destabilized dozens of Muslim countries from Iraq and Iran by invading them and pushing our values down their throats, democracy, which has proven to be a failure in other countries.
No, we don't have an obligation to take them in. Thank you.
Okay.
But hold on, I want to just try to drill in on something that bothers you, and it should, which is our reckless foreign policy agenda. So then would you entertain voting for Trump, who started no new wars for 4 years of his presidency?
But he continued like the Afghanistan war.
No, he tried to end it. He did everything he could to actually troops were getting out. You know how many troops died under Donald Trump's last 18 months? Zero American service members were killed over the last 18 months. And under Joe Biden, the withdrawal was reckless and terrible, and you saw what happened.
That's true, but he didn't end the war. He tried to.
Well, fair enough. But the way that Biden ended, I don't think is something we should ever praise, right? It's like saying you got to get an appendix removed and you take out a pocket knife and you just start like... I mean, it was one of the most catastrophic, humiliating withdrawals and moments in American history. But so I will just I'm curious, though, because with Biden, we have new wars everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. We're dropping bombs in Yemen. We're dropping bombs in Syria. You know, we're giving $100 billion just this last time to Ukraine versus Russia. We have Israel, Hamas. So does the actual concrete data that shows that Trump was a peacemaker and kept stability abroad, is that persuasive to you?
With Ukraine, I feel like the Ukraine war is justified. I feel like war is not always justified, and I think you agree with that because I think you support what Israel is doing in Gaza right now. But I feel like the world is going down and American influence is leaving, and we have a right, and we must aid Ukraine.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I disagree with that. Took a lot of courage for you to get up to this mic. I appreciate it. We have clarity but not agreement. I hope you vote for Trump.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. So I've seen you like talk a lot about like objective morality. And my big question is, you know, it feels like you can make good statements and bad statements without referencing some kind of like moral book. So I can say like something is good, right? I had a good day today. And it doesn't really feel like I need to reference religion for that. Can you explain to me why you think we need to have some kind of absolute standard for, like, morality?
Excellent question. It's really good. If you say you have a good day, are you describing the experience you had, or was it morally a good day?
So yeah, it would be a good day. So I can like narrow it down more, I guess. Or I can ask, I guess, like a better question. So if I don't have religion, right? Let's say I am an atheist or something, and I were to go up to, I find like two books. One's the Quran, and then one is the Bible. And I read both of them, and then I have a feeling of preference towards one or the other. That makes me feel like morality probably isn't objective because I read two moral codes. I didn't have one before, and then I derived one after reading it.
But one is true.
Well, yeah, obviously if you go in with the presupposition that one is true.
But so
like,
let's play this out. Sorry to interrupt. If I'm on an island, and let's just demystify part of this, and there's the Bible, and then there's Lord of the Rings, and I end up believing in one of those, which is true.
Well, what's true is just what corresponds with reality. We're talking about...
I agree. So which one has evidence, and when applied in the natural world, actually shows a flourishing people and society and a way to live? Because you would agree, at least out of 8 out of 10 of the Ten Commandments, they're pretty good rules for life,
no,
right?
No, yeah, 100%.
Of course, yes.
No, but the thing that I'm talking about is doesn't have to do with whether or not Christianity is good or bad or whether
I
agree with most of... Yeah, it's just regarding, like, one can be true, but even if one is true, it doesn't really feel like I'm influenced in terms of what I feel is good or bad, because obviously, you know, there are people who are Muslim who have read, you know, the Bible and still are more persuaded by Islam.
No, of course. I mean, you could be persuaded by anything, right? That doesn't, I believe that there is a transcendent way of living. I call that the Bible, right? And I believe it's the perfect catalog from creation to the end of the world. You don't have to agree with that. I'm talking strictly from a moral sense. So let's just ask a separate question, which is, do you think people are naturally, outside of, you know, religious teaching, good or not so good? The nature of humanity.
The nature. I wouldn't be comfortable making a statement about
it. Fair enough, and I appreciate that. So we believe, as Christians or those in the space, human beings are pretty awful, okay? That we're broken, that we're sinful, that we fall short of the glory of God, and that we need to teach people how to be good. A common left-wing belief is that human beings are actually awesome, and they're terrific. And the reason why things are not so good is because of capitalism or the patriarchy or feminism or whatever. So you're asking a question of, you know, why do we need objective morality? Well, or what specifically?
So not necessarily why we need objective morality, but you seem to be, because obviously I don't believe that it's a thing, but you seem to make the claim that...
Do you believe that absolutely?
No.
okay, good.
But
you're consistent.
Yeah, the big thing is for me, even if I have a God, there is no thing telling me, like, you know, it's just like the is-ought problem, right? That's like my big contention, right? How am I ever going to derive a claim about what I should do from only statements about the nature of being?
Got it. So is you would believe murder's wrong?
Yeah.
Why do you believe that?
Because in its definition, it says it's wrong, right? It's wrong killing of somebody, or at least that's my understanding of it.
Okay, so... I mean, so for example, you go to an African village, happens all the time. They leave a full-born baby by the fire. They don't want it. They discard it. Happens tons of times. Any missionary will tell you that. They just discard babies. Why? They don't believe it's wrong. It's just in their code and custom. No one feels bad about it. Just discard kids you don't want. Are they wrong?
For me, yeah, they're wrong. Yeah. But it's a bullet I have to bite for my worldview. Hold on.
Are they objectively wrong? Is it objective?
No. Because I don't believe in objective morality. So that can apply to any
statement. So it's not objectively wrong to leave a full-born baby by the fire and just say, you're on your own, have a nice life.
Well, yeah, I'm calling into question objective morality. So I obviously have
to...
No, I'm just
trying to make you hear back how insane what you are saying.
Well, you're making a claim about the objectivity of it.
No, I think it's wrong. Let's get more graphic. So you put 1,000 Jews in a gas chamber, and the Nazis thought what they were doing was good, and they pressed the button. Were they right or were they wrong in gassing millions of Jews?
Objectively, you can't, like, when you say, is it objectively wrong? Hold on, wait. If you say it's objectively wrong, you're implying that you can derive a truth value from it. And I don't think you can. So I don't think that you can make a true statement regarding whether something's good or bad.
Got it. So just to be clear, the Nazis could have been right in their actions, in your view.
That implies that right is an actual thing. I don't believe you can determine a truth value from a moral claim.
So the Nazis were not objectively evil.
Yeah, I've said that like 4 times. Like, yeah, you can't derive objective moral statements from like things. I'm not saying they're not wrong. Like, they are wrong.
Well, no, it's okay.
Yeah.
No, I just want to make sure this is important, because what you are saying, and you're saying it very clearly, is that we look at the Holocaust and it's just a matter of opinion.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem of being an atheist. You have to bite the bullet.
I respect your intellectual clarity, and I will say...
And obviously, well, for clarity,
no.
I obviously think the Holocaust is wrong. So if anyone's questioning
about
that,
it's just your opinion. I believe that it's objectively wrong, no matter who you are or where you come from, because it transcends opinion. Do you think, last question, I appreciate your clarity on this, do you see how your view could result in a lot of dead people?
Well, I don't think my view is really I'm not making a claim that we should behave in a way.
No, you're making claims.
Well, I am making claims, yeah. But I'm not making a claim that, like, we should behave in a certain way or, like, that we ought to, like, you know, not have Christianity or some kind
of
moral
code. No, I'm not saying
that.
But let me play this out, and I think you'll understand.
No, I understand, because you're going to say, well, there's all these bad things that could happen if people follow me.
Or that did happen. No, I'm not following you. If your view becomes a view of a country and... For example, putting 1,000 Jews in a gas chamber is not deemed as objectively wrong, transcendent above anyone's opinion, then all of a sudden, what would prevent that evil thing from occurring and nobody questioning it?
Sure. So my main idea, I guess, with the worldview is I'm not making a claim again about how things should be. I'm making a claim that this is how things are. So within my like worldview, this is all fine. You can have people agreeing that things are wrong. Generally, I think most people's moral intuitions will lead them to thinking that things like murder is wrong and stealing is wrong because it makes you feel bad, right?
No, well,
if I see somebody get hurt, that makes me feel bad. If you see somebody die,
course,
that makes you
totally.
Feel bad.
Yeah, the SS guards didn't feel bad when they killed Jews, and that's okay. But do you see where this might unravel into mass murder and societal chaos?
Yeah, that happens in the real world. I'm making a description about the way people derive their morals. I'm not saying how we should or shouldn't. I'm saying this is how you derive your morals. If you have two books there, the trueness or correspondence with reality has zero anything to do with your preference towards, you know, one moral system or another.
Hold on. Or maybe the true one says, don't gas the Jews.
That would be, yeah,
murder.
That would be obviously,
because God will judge you harshly.
Yeah, 100%.
Just hear me out. Maybe the true one says that life is good and that there is a creator who loves you.
But
maybe,
now what you're doing is you're just making claims about what you think. Like, yeah, obviously it would be awesome if I had a moral code that everyone had to follow that agreed with
I know, if
that
only
I said.
A book existed.
Yeah, I know, if only. But my
if,
entire
if only
point
there
is
was this amazing book.
Yeah, but my point is that...
No, you're being super clear. I appreciate it.
Okay, yeah.
No, and you're the first person ever, to your credit, to answer the atheist Nazi question clearly, which is that an atheist cannot objectively say that the Holocaust is wrong.
I'm arguing against objective, like the idea that...
No, you're being... Yeah. Usually there's some withering there. You went right into there.
Well, yeah, I can't go in here and, like, not bite the bullets of, like, what my argument implies, like...
We have clarity but not agreement. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Hey, Charlie. I am 19 years of age at the UW, and I stand before you wearing PJs because I'm a hardworking foster student. I have a question aside from politics today, and I mean it in the most authentic way possible. I recently just received my coaching certification as a life coach, and I love what I do. I also love my mom, who is also a life coach, an inspiration in my life to be the best that I can be. Collectively, we believe in the law of attraction to attract more of what we want to the universe energetically. Do you believe in the law of attraction as well?
No.
What?
Because it's New Age voodoo.
Hey, fair enough. That's your opinion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Charlie. So I grew up in a community where Christians were a minority, with primarily Muslim and Jewish people, and we had the Jewish high holidays off. And it's really interesting that we're just casually talking about Jews being murdered as a debate point. But anyway... I was wondering to what extent you agreed or disagreed with Christian Zionists like John Hagee and the late Pat Robertson about the expulsion of non-Jews from Israel's territory as allegedly indicated in the Bible as being a necessary prerequisite for the second coming of Christ.
I don't have strong opinions on that. My opinions on Israel are, I don't get into the specific politics or theology there. I instead say that Israel has a right to exist, a country the size of New Jersey that has half the world's Jewry, that is in the Middle East, where there are over 20 Muslim-majority countries, that a single Jewish nation state has a right to exist in the Middle East. Absolutely. That's my contention. When it gets into those specific, issues, I don't get too far into that. And I want to say there's a lot of pastors that know much more about the theology of the end times than I do, so I point people to them. So
as we speak, Rafah is being bombed right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as an analogy, after 9/11, which I remember clearly, I watched it on the television with my parents, around 3,000 Americans were killed on that day. As a result, Afghanistan was invaded, and estimates say that around 70,000 civilians died as a result of that invasion. And then later, despite having no connection to the Saudi militants mm-hmm. who were responsible
right.
for Iraq was invaded. And a 2013 study by the University of Washington estimated that over 400,000 Iraqis were killed as a result of that
invasion.
Try
to get to the question. I actually agree with a lot of what you're saying, but sorry to get to the question.
Yes.
We have a lot. Look how long the line is.
I understand. Yeah. I think context is vitally important.
Okay, what is the question?
So those actions were used to justify America keeping ourselves safe. What proportionate force is justifiable for Israel to keep itself safe? Do they need to expel the entirety of the Palestinian population and bomb city centers and hospitals and in the name of safety? What is proportionate force?
About this? Any person that is a outspoken terrorist of Hamas needs to be killed, and until that happens, then the war will continue.
I understand. Yes. But
it's not that complicated.
Dump bombs and cluster munitions differentiate between a Hamas militant and an innocent child?
Okay, again, every death of a child is a tragedy. I don't want you to get too worked up. I think we can
agree
on that.
No, I also want to understand, do you think that Christians are superior to people of other faiths and they have more of a right to self-determination in terms of allocating borders?
No, I don't believe that Christians are superior.
Okay,
no.
So then why are you supporting allocating $3 billion to Israel?
Okay, happy to answer that. I believe, just to be clear, I believe in two types of people. Saved and not saved. Very simple. Okay?
That's a binary category that doesn't exist in reality.
Got it. Okay. Well, you'll find out one day.
Okay.
But secondly, I don't even know how to answer. Israel has a right to exist. They were attacked.
At what cost?
To destroy Hamas. And Hamas is clustered in Rafah.
How do you differentiate between an innocent civilian and a Hamas militant?
Yes, this is part of the tragedy of war that they did not invite, but Hamas did, which is that you have collateral damage.
So
and
what the level of collateral damage is acceptable There's for no, Israel to defend
there, there, there
itself?
There is not some sort of equation. Here's the tragedy of it, is that until Hamas is defeated, innocent people are going to die
So the entirety of the Palestinian people need to be expelled?
Rafah needs
to be bombed to smithereens?
No, I think that, first of all,
Israel needs to keep itself safe, Charlie.
Well, hold on.
What's the necessary cost?
Well, first of all,
What's the necessary trade-off?
Let me ask you a question.
What human life is more valuable?
Let me ask you a question.
An Israeli or a Palestinian?
Can I ask you a question? First of all, all people are equal under God. We're talking about a question of which nation state is morally fighting a war and which is not. So let me ask you a question. Very simple.
Are we justified in killing 400,000 Iraqis, Charlie?
I don't support the Iraq war. I never
have. So why are you supporting this one?
I was 8 years old. So I don't know what you're... I was eight. But let me just ask a very simple question. If it's true, and Israel only wanted to kill as many Gazans as possible, why are they putting ground troops into Rafah, where they will assuredly lose their own defense forces? Why don't they just carpet bomb Rafah to be a parking
lot? They are blocking civilian
aid. No. Answer the question. If it was
aid,
just
Charlie,
about killing, if it was
they
just
they are blocking humanitarian
on.
Aid, and the people there are starving, Charlie.
They're actually letting U.S. aid in.
They are not. It's alternative facts, well, Charlie.
Well, hold on, but. Hold on. Just...
Where are you hearing that? Citations needed, buddy. Where are they?
Okay.
Give your citations. I want them.
Okay. First of all, let me just ask I want you to answer the question, which I think is very important, which is, sorry, you're very excited about this, and
yeah.
I'm honestly not that worked up.
I'm excited about the U.S. funding genocide against innocent people.
Hold on a second. This is where I really find this objectionable. Everything you said was funny up until then. We should not throw around the word genocide when it is not a genocide.
It is
a theater of war.
It is a genocide.
Let me tell you why.
Hold on.
Hold on a second.
They have disrupted humanitarian aid. They have the humanitarian corridor between Egypt
and Palestine. Let me answer the question. Let me answer the question. Very simple.
Give me the facts, Charlie.
How do you define it?
Give me the facts.
How do you define a genocide? An active theater of war?
So, genocide.
No. Hold on. Where do you go from war to genocide? Because here's the problem.
I
got three words in. Let me try to get four in. Genocides are super rare.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. Okay,
so
the Rwandan genocide, the Turkish-Armenian genocide, the Stalin genocide against the Kazakhs, and finally Hitler's genocide.
You mentioned the genocides against white people. The genocides against non-white people?
Yeah, how about
Charlie?
Like Mao Zedong's genocide against the working class?
What about Iraq War, which was a genocide?
Again, not
what
a
about
Iraq
that?
War.
That is a genocide.
I'm not a... Okay, again...
So why are you... Israel is engaging
genocide.
In actions similar to the United States. Why don't you hold them to the
hold
same
on.
Standard as what the United
hold
States...
Hold on. No, guys, hold on. Let me just be very clear. People dying in war is not a genocide. You know what a genocide is? Is a deliberate, systematic, attempted elimination.
This is a deliberate Zionist project
if,
to eliminate Muslim people.
So now we're going...
That is a genocide.
Hold on a second. We're going to now take you at your own words. If it was a genocide, why doesn't Israel just drop a nuclear bomb on Rafah?
They've been dropping
answer the question.
And
why
bombs.
Don't they just end it? If they wanted all the Arab
because
Muslims dead, because
over,
they don't.
They
because they're fighting
over,
a humane war and
land.
Dropping leaflets
they
beforehand because they don't want them all dead. I have had enough of this Israel hatred. Instead... Israel has been patient and deliberate. They warn before they attack. They try to get citizens out of the way.
They
offer humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza. They have funded hospitals. They say, hey, we're about to bomb you. We're about to bomb you. If they're trying to commit genocide, they're doing the worst job you can imagine. Instead, and I want to get to the final question here, but I think it's very important. The same way the left uses, it's racism.
So
the
advocates, do Muslim lives matter, Charlie?
Of course they
matter? Do.
They
matter?
Yes, every
so
life...
So why do you support sending $3 billion in aid to Israel to fund this?
Well, I actually support more than that, but I mean...
Well, yes, exactly! You support this whole project! It is a part of the Christian Zionist project that John Hagee and Pat Robertson embraced.
I'm not defending
and
these people.
APAC.
But let me
you
ask a final question.
That.
I just
want to
make
you
sure.
You want the second coming of Christ.
Let me ask
and the
a final
Jews
question.
To be eliminated because you believe in Christian supremacy.
I really don't, actually. I want all people to come to Christ.
You want all people to come to Christ?
Yes.
Even my Jewish family members. You want us to come to Christ?
Yes, I hope you accept Yeshua as the Lord and Savior because Christ is King.
To Christ.
I hope you come to Jesus.
The Jewish community that I grew up with to come to Christ.
Yes.
And what if we don't come to Christ?
Because the Messiah you've been waiting for at Passover already came,
what if
lived,
we don't come
died,
to Christ,
and resurrected
Charlie?
For you.
What if
the
we
Son
don't
of the Living God
Christ?
Is alive. And if you give your life to Christ, you'll be transformed from within.
What if we don't come come to Christ, what are the consequences? The Jewish community.
I have no idea. I don't make statements on that.
Not coming to Christ. My family members not coming to Christ.
I don't know. Here's what I know what the scriptures say.
What are the consequences politically? What do you want to happen to the Jews? Solve the Jewish question, Charlie.
I love Jews so
What's
much I support Israel. Which side am I on?
You want us all to come to Israel?
Next question. Give your life to Jesus. Christ is King. Thank you so much. Next question, please. Thank you. Thank you. God bless you and may Christ keep you. Yes.
Okay, so we talked earlier. I wanted to clarify. I meant Bidulac. That's not relevant to the questions I want to ask now, but when I make mistakes, I like to take ownership and circle back and correct them. We talked earlier, I made clear that me and you do not see eye to eye on many issues, likely most of them, but that doesn't mean that I don't have conservative friends and conservative role models that have been there for me, and I know my stepdad would be very proud that I'm talking to you right now. And he's been there for me when no one else has. So to start this conversation, I'm hoping to reach across the aisle because I think it's important to mobilize the left and mobilize the right.
I remember you from earlier, very polite.
Okay. Do you support veterans' rights and disability rights?
Say that one more time.
Do you support veterans and disability rights?
No, I don't support rights for certain groups. I support human rights, but I support those communities. Yes, I support veterans and disability people.
So you think civil rights violations in those communities is wrong?
Of course. I believe that if anybody's human God-given rights or your natural rights, let me use that word.
Okay.
Civil rights is kind of a very abstract term. Natural rights. Right to life, your right to liberty, and your right to own property. If those things are violated, regardless if you are in a wheelchair or a veteran or not, then it's wrong.
Okay, so sorry, the semantics here. I see what you're saying. So I think the University of Washington is violating these rights. They're violating students' freedom of speech. They're retaliating against students. Our generation, likely because of the way we did remote school, and I think you can agree with me that the way the universities across the nation handled the pandemic was terrible.
Yes.
So I think we can both find common ground there.
What is the question? Really quick. Yeah, because we got like a long line, man. So.
I get it. I'm sorry. I wanted to bring attention to the fact that the University of Washington has retaliated against students with disabilities, veterans who didn't have their rights met. There's like veterans who would need a scribe in a class, for example, who is denied a reasonable accommodation of a scribe, who could barely move their hands. They're given basically a speech-to-text software that had two-factor authentication forced onto the machine. The 2FA had to verify that they're human. They couldn't verify they're human to turn the thing on. And they didn't do that to all students. They targeted certain students.
What is the question, man? I know you got a lot of gripes against this university. I do, too. So what is the question?
Will you clip this and put it online? I want to give this a
No. Your question is so specific, I don't even know what it is. So.
Okay. I'm just asking for help. I'm trying to reach across the aisle.
Okay,
I'll talk to anyone I can about this issue.
Our chapter's happy to help with
liberal
you.
Media.
I'm sorry that you're, that's been infringed upon, and we're happy to help you. So.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
I'm a fascist? What?
No. Someone's screaming. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, man. We're happy to talk to you, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Hi, Charlie.
Yes.
Nice to meet you. My question today is, why do you think college is a scam? And I know that you went through this question like every day, so just...
I did it 7 times today, but yes.
Okay, so just to give some...
Hey, I love that!
Okay. USA! Okay.
Stop hitting each other. It's like children up here. Why is college a scam? Well,
okay. So just to give some context, my name is Evan. I'm 18. I'm a junior studying finance and information systems. And just recently, I did an analysis on human capital and financial capital. And college turns out to be one of the best investments you can make because it increases your human capital over your lifetime, allowing you to earn more money and overall have a better quality of life. And why do you believe that college is a scam, knowing that?
So let's just go through a couple numbers here. So, all right. Okay. All right, let's go through a couple numbers. All All right. Okay. So we got that over with. The national graduation rate, only 41% of people that enter college will not graduate. Half of this audience, when you enter the job market pool, if you get a job, you will not need your college degree when you actually end up getting that job, about 50%. It's a chilling number. There are 11 million job openings in this country that pay very well that do not require a college degree. My contention is, of course, some people are able to make the most of being in college. They're able to maximize it. However, for many of you, you have been sold a bill of goods and lied to unnecessarily go into college to study things that don't matter, to go find jobs that don't exist. And so let me ask a question. In this audience, how many of you have been forced to take a class that is a waste of time or money that you wish you would not have to take? Look around, yeah. Yep. And so this is not about putting the student first. It's about enriching the administration. It is about keeping them powerful at your expense. They could get you out of here quicker, charge you less money, and give you a higher product. And so that's why I use the word that I use.
Okay, building up on that question, do you know that the dropout rate after freshman year is only about 24%?
That's right, yes.
And building on top of that, the average college graduate earns more than $900,000. A male college graduate earns more than $900,000 compared to their high school graduate counterpart. Well, and a female college graduate earns more than $630,000 over their lifetime. My problem with your statement is that you're possibly discouraging future doctors, engineers, and professionals from taking the college route.
No, I'm definitely discouraging that. But secondly, you have to factor in what they're studying. So that study only makes sense if you factor in the degree. And so if you're here studying computer science, which is a great, you know, program here at UW, that's fine. But if you're studying sociology, life sciences, or communications, it brings down the average dramatically. And so we have 11 million job openings we can't fill, because we have way too many people going after the credential in college and not getting the skills that are necessary for advanced manufacturing, things of that nature. And we don't have to agree on that, but, I mean, I'm here to just tell you guys that you're getting ripped off and you're getting scammed, and it's not worth the time or money that many of you guys are putting in.
So is it correct to my understanding that you still think college is a scam and you do discourage future students from becoming doctors, engineers, and professionals?
I say that if I'm discouraging somebody from going $280,000 into debt to go be filled with ideas that don't matter, if they have a really good skill or an idea to start a business, or they have an opportunity that they say no to at the age of 18 to go endlessly into the college circuit, yes, I'm absolutely discouraging them to automatically go into a college four-year cycle. Absolutely.
So you're discouraging the idea of taking useless classes and also majoring in something that doesn't provide value.
Well,
but
yeah,
you're not discouraging going to college inherently for studying something that can add value to the overall society.
Only less than 10% of kids that go to college will study engineering, doctor, you know, medicine, or so forth. 10%. So that other 90%, what is that all about?
Well, there are other majors such as like chemistry, biology, and other many different kinds of majors that are crucial.
No, I agree. There's also, you know, diversity majors. You guys had to take a diversity class here by mandate, is what I'm told, right? It's a scam.
Yeah, but my problem with your message is that
that's fine. We just are not going to agree. That's fine.
Okay, so we agree to disagree.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Yes. All right, we're already over time. I'm going to try to get to some more. If you disagree, go to the front of the line. We're going to stay a little later. Thanks.
Absolutely.
To the,
yeah, hello UW, and hello Charlie. Thank you so much for being here today. My name's Griffin. So I am a leftist and an atheist, and I think we disagree on a lot of things, but I respect you coming here for this dialogue. What I really want to focus on today is not problems, but solutions. So you have repeatedly called Trump the only anti-war candidate, and that's directly to quote you, and blame the current conflict in Gaza, at least somewhat, on Biden and his policies. What concrete steps, if any, do you believe Donald Trump would or should take to actually end that conflict or help save lives and save people?
Excellent question. First and foremost, you shouldn't give Iran the $50 billion back, which is then funding Hamas, day one. So through multiple steps and measures, Joe Biden has released or unfrozen over $50 billion that went to the Iranian mullahs, and they send that money back for rockets and assistance. And through the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they were the intel operation arm of what happened with Hamas on October 7th. So that's some concrete actions immediately.
So
you cut off the funding.
Yeah. So another great like kind of point or a subset of that is Donald Trump has made it very clear that he is in support of Israel's war, and even before has been in support of the not genocide but the apartheid that has been occurring in Gaza with the mass displacement of people from their homes, whether or not you think they are entitled to the land or not. Do you think that continuous support to Israel will do much in stopping a terrorist group that, well, horrible, is formed primarily in objection to individuals being displaced from their homes?
Well, first of all, Donald Trump recently said he wants to see Israel, quote, wrap up the war. And so you got to make
a great policy plan.
Well, I mean, he was actually a pretty awesome president when it came to war. Biden, who I'm guessing you're voting for, has us in more wars than he can even count to, which is not very high, obviously, just looking at him. I mean, we have active theaters in Yemen and Syria. We have reemergences in Iraq. We have Iran attacking Israel, Israel with Hamas. We have Hezbollah, Israel, Ukraine, Russia. We have BRICS forming. The world is completely falling apart. And so you can criticize all you want with Trump. What specifically can he do? I can't speak for his entire agenda. You can freeze the funding. He said that he wants Israel to wrap up the war. He would end the Russian-Ukrainian war. And here is just a fact. If you're a leftist, and you're a leftist, and thank you, for by the way, for being here. It's great. Free speech keeps this country strong. I mean that. Which is, if you want to see less war and less unjust human suffering, which we all agree with, there's only one president that was able to keep Vladimir Putin from taking more Ukrainian land. Under Barack Obama, Vladimir Putin annexed Crimea. When Donald Trump was president, he did not get an extra inch of Ukraine. Under Joe Biden, he invaded Ukraine, and we spent $200 billion and 100,000 dead Ukrainians. Your response?
So that's a great point, and I think that's really important to talk about here, because I want to note that Russian leadership has time and time again been in favor of a Trump presidency. My question to you is, what exactly would Donald Trump have done differently than Biden to stop the current annexation of Ukrainian land?
It doesn't need to be so speculative. You're asking for a policy answer. I could just point to that he didn't do it when he was president. And that's because Trump was able, he was willing to threaten Putin when Putin got a little too uppity. And he was also willing to not make Russia into an unnecessary enemy in the 21st century and configure us instead against China and the Chinese Communist Party. And so I don't need to like ask, oh, what would Trump do or not? He did. It worked. We had more peace and less unjust human suffering because Trump's business instincts worked. Trump was able to bring people to the table. He did the summit with Helsinki, with Vladimir Putin in Helsinki. And Joe Biden has operated the war machine even more enthusiastically than George W. Bush in some ways. There's more money going to the war manufacturers than we've ever seen. And
So first, I want to make it very clear. I am in no way supporting Biden. I do not believe that Biden
is
made.
You're intellectually
policies.
Honest. You deserve credit for that.
No, and I'm not supporting Trump either. I mean, I probably would end up voting for Biden just in like the comparison between Biden and Trump. I'll be honest about that. But neither candidate benefits me when we see wars that hurt thousands to benefit tens of people. My ultimate like question to you is this like showmanship or this idea that Donald Trump was this amazing negotiator is fundamentally not backed up by
anything. Well, hold on. It's totally backed up because we have 4 years of a presidency to look at. If Trump was just a candidate, your point would be fair. Look at the 4 years. Tell me where the new war was.
I mean, I don't think a new war is necessarily the only indicative way to determine who's a good negotiator.
Hold
who's
on.
Good
okay,
at
another,
policy.
Okay, let's get another one. Who brokered an Israeli peace deal, Biden or Trump?
I want to say specifically that Israeli peace deal has not held
Hold
up
on
very
a second.
Well.
Well, yeah, because we changed presidents. It was called the Abraham Accords. It was between Israel, Bahrain, United Emirates.
I just want to know.
And it's historic.
I want to note that most of the things that happened during the early years of Biden presidency were actually set up during the Trump presidency. Deals do not
Hold
take
on
effect
a
immediately.
Do you notice I don't blame Obama for anything that Trump inherited? I instead am able to brag because Trump has accomplishments while Biden has nothing but destructive impulses.
Trump has been the worst president for U.S. foreign relations, for democracy, and fundamentally for the economy
as
well.
It's easy to say those things. Let's just even play your whole thing out. Did NATO funding go up or down under Trump?
I'm not exactly sure.
Historic highs, okay? This whole idea of democracy, which is very hard for the left to ever define, but let's just kind of play this out, is that when Donald Trump was president, we weren't worrying about Putin invading Ukraine. We weren't worrying about Israel fighting Hamas. It was stability around the world. And it's not a question. You're trying to find an answer. Maybe it's this. Maybe he's just really good at being president.
So no. So I really want to make this clear, because I think that point kind of talks about, like, it doesn't actually answer my question whatsoever. I could say the same. Like, why is it that under Trump the economy fell faster than it has?
Well, hold on.
Since 2008,
I could tell you
and
why.
Because of Corona.
No, yeah. I could tell you why. It's because we locked down the country and we shouldn't have, and we got it all back by the time the election was happening 9 months later. You asked a question. Why did the economy fall? We decided to lock down our country, something that we should never have done, and we decided to close businesses unnecessarily. Okay, so, and by the time the election was occurring, the market had already recovered and jobs were already coming back. So you asked a question.
No, and I agree with you. I agree with you. No, I 100% agree with that point. Not necessarily that we shouldn't have shut down the economy, but like that outside factors influence basically the what happened during a president's time. Now, I actually think that the war like in Gaza, as it happens, is not directly related to the policy that Biden has done, other than supporting Israel and providing military aid in that sense. And also, for example, the war in Ukraine is actually largely because they no longer have a president like Donald Trump, who they believe they can manipulate, and like Russian leadership can use the way they were. In fact, as Biden has taken actually more of an anti-Russian stance, it means
maybe Trump is manipulating Putin.
I've seen him talk. I'm not sure that happens.
Okay. Yeah, that's an easy thing for someone to say, because you think that he's
not sophisticated. No, but that's exactly what you say all the time. You make fun of Biden because he like stutters a little, or you make fun of protesters because they're ugly.
Hold on. Let me tell you what Biden did the other day. Thanks for being here, folks. Pause. He read pause on the teleprompter. He has trouble with stairs. Stairs are like a daunting task. When he gets up the stairs, they're like, thank goodness, he didn't fall again. Joe Biden confused Jill Biden with his sister. This is not a well
Donald
man.
Donald Trump confused his wife with his daughter, so I don't know.
Hold on, that never happened. But secondly, hold on, let's just be very clear. But besides, you know, poking fun at Joe Biden's senility, let me just ask some three very simple questions. When Trump was president, and when Biden is president, because now we have four independent terms, right? It's not like, oh, here's what I think. For the first time since the 1892 election, we actually have two people that have previously been president running up against one another, right? 1892, Grover Cleveland versus Benjamin Harrison. So when independent terms, which one was managing the border better?
I think Joe Biden. I will justify that. I will justify it.
Please.
Economically, when an immigrant comes to this country, even an illegal immigrant, even someone who does not have high-level, high-earning skills, they contribute more to the economy as a whole than they take away. They contribute to fixed expenses like the military. They provide more into social benefits than they take. And if we're talking about issues with like job scarcity, what we actually have is an issue with job distribution and the way our systems are set up to take advantage of poor working-class Americans.
So do you believe in borders at all?
I believe that practically, yes. I believe that there does need to be major reform in the way we deal with borders.
I just want to make sure you understand. How many people do you think are coming across the border every day?
I do not have the exact numbers on that, yes. But I think it's a reasonable amount. I'd probably say in the thousands, tens of thousands.
Yeah, 10 to 15,000 a day. So to put that annualized, that's 3.65 million a year minimum,
sure.
Right? That is the population more than some U.S. states. You're saying it's all a benefit. First of all, tell that to the family of Lake and Riley, okay? Secondly, I asked you a question. Who is managing the border better? We don't have a border under Biden. You arrive, you're in. We've gotten rid of DNA testing.
That is just not true.
Hold on a second. How many people are being turned away at the border? Are we doing DNA testing, background checks?
What you mean, like turned away at the border? Lots of people are turned away at the border, immigrating
who?
To the U.S. legally. Like the majority
Hold
of
on,
people
no, no.
who don't
if
have
you,
visas.
If you show up in Ciudad Juarez at the other side of El Paso and you claim asylum, welcome, buddy. You get a free ticket to the interior of the United States, cell phone, benefits, social security number, and you are now in the United States of America despite breaking the laws. And that's fine. We just have a difference of opinion on this. I find it so interesting of someone who's trying to like justify the breaking coming into our country and the breaking of our laws, but you have a right to that opinion. So.
No. I don't think it's an opinion. I don't necessarily know like where you're getting these statistics, but I don't think Joe Biden is just like, come on in. Like, everyone's opened the border.
No, he absolutely did that.
No, he has not. He has not been like that. And more than that, what actually we need when we're talking about immigration reform, we need to make immigration more accessible for legal immigration.
Now, how about this? Or we need to put our own U.S. citizens first ahead of foreigners. Yeah? Isn't the whole idea of a government that the citizens of the country should come above the citizens of another country?
United States citizens, we are immigrants.
Hold on a second. Some are immigrants here. Some are descendants of settlers. Settlers and immigrants are two different things. Settlers come to a barren land and build something new. Immigrants come to a country that's already
barren?
Built. Yeah, barren. Like, okay. I don't know, Plymouth Rock.
Okay, I won't get into that. You know what? I'll let more questions get.
I appreciate the clarity. I just want to be just final question here. Do you believe the Biden presidency has been a success for the country?
I believe Joe Biden has time and time again gave into corporate greed and behaved in ways that do not benefit the American people.
I agree.
And then let me say one last thing, and then I'll leave.
You're honest.
It's been a very productive discussion. What I believe is that Donald Trump inherently and his supporters are making a show of it. He is a reality TV star, and if you actually took the time yourselves to read the policy, to actually read the legislation and the real impact it's had on the day-to-day lives, economies, or global foreign policy that Donald Trump has impacted, you would see it's by and large negative. I do not just not support Trump because he made fun of a disabled reporter, despite the fact that I find that appalling that an elected official would do that. I do not think his policy has benefited America, benefited the world at all.
Hold on, but you don't think that. But actually, in every public opinion poll, they say the Trump economy is way better than the Biden economy, and they were richer than ever before. And so that's fine. You're entitled to that. But it's very simple. I have a difference of opinion than you. Mine is rooted in reality. I don't think yours is, and we don't agree. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Wonderful.
All right, we're going to keep going. Yes.
Hi, Mr. Kirk. Thank you for coming to UW. I'm the vice president of the College Democrats of Washington, but I love having debates with and learning from folks with whom I disagree. My question is about the corporate tax rate and specifically the top marginal corporate tax rate. Why do you believe that increasing the top marginal corporate tax rate would stifle innovation and harm our economy?
Well, I mean, by definition, first of all, the government is already way too big and we shouldn't raise taxes as it is. We have a $6 trillion federal budget right now. But it depends on what you mean by a corporation. Do you mean Apple or do you mean your local laundromat?
Top marginal corporate tax rate. So let's just say for large cap companies over $10 billion.
Fair enough, yeah. Because the way that the tax code is written is that you could form an S corp or a C corp or an LLC and they get treated very similarly. But I mean, what is your question? Why do I think it will stifle innovation? Well, the more the government takes, then the less money the companies will have to actually invest in products for research and development. And I'm not a defender of corporations. In fact, I think corporations are doing a lot of damage to this country right now. So.
Yeah, but I would personally advocate for increasing it perhaps to double what it is right now at 21%.
Of course, you're a Democrat. You want more money that isn't yours.
No, because when you say that, like, increasing this tax rate will stifle innovation. The entrepreneurs themselves disagree with you. Bill Gates himself called this idea, quote unquote, nonsense.
Yeah, it's easy for Bill Gates. He's worth $120 billion, so he can, you know, jet around the world complaining about climate change and trying to get people to take vaccines they don't need. It doesn't affect him, right? Microsoft is worth $3 trillion. They're too big to fail. This is very simple. All taxes ultimately do this. They forcibly take money away from an efficient part of our country, and they transfer it to an inefficient, bloated, corrupt part of our country, the government. It's that simple. So it's not that we should have zero taxes. It's that you're calling for doubling, which is to take more money from a efficient part of the economy towards a bloated federal government that is already spending $6 trillion a year, the biggest the government has ever been.
I mean, I would push back on the idea that it is an efficient part of the economy. Look at, for example, Microsoft and Apple. Both of these companies have over $150 billion in cash on hand, not cash that is being used for R&D, cash that is just sitting in bank accounts. And I would like to point out that these two companies, the two most valuable companies in the world, were founded while the corporate tax rates were significantly higher than they are right now. So, of course, now, like, they're massive behemoths. It doesn't affect them. But when these companies were getting started, like the corporate tax rates were incredibly high.
Because it didn't impact them, because they were getting started. It didn't impact them. They were getting started, like you said.
No, but even when they, after they got started.
Hold on, let's play this out. Because they weren't turning a profit for the first 30 years. Like, learn something about Microsoft's history.
Hold on a second.
They didn't pay any taxes for 20 years. No corporation worth any salt or an accountant that knows what they're doing is not going to pay any taxes for 20 years. Why? You're going to intentionally show losses to not pay taxes. Taxes, by definition, are only going to be on profits. So Apple and Microsoft, being very nifty, they said, we're just going to keep on showing deficits and showing losses, therefore evading all corporate taxes for 20 years. And where do they get their money? By boosting the stock price, by going through an IPO, an initial public offering, and then eventually going on the public market and boosting their valuation by showing losses, but their valuation is actually much greater than the quote-unquote profit. Does that make sense, the profit margin? So the argument doesn't hit.
No, but when you look at the profit margins, Microsoft was an incredibly profitable company even within 15 years.
They are now, obviously.
No. Even at the beginning, software is the biggest money printer in the history of the world.
They weren't profitable. That's the point, is that they spent more than they brought in. They had good revenue. You know the difference in revenue and profit, obviously.
No.
But these companies intentionally did not turn a profit for the first couple decades. They'd be silly to do that.
No. They were profitable. That's my point. They had a price-to-earnings ratio. Microsoft in the 80s and the 90s was a profitable company.
No, I understand, but the point being is that these startup companies, I'd have to go all the way back into the business literature of every single year, they intentionally, just using as an example, their stock as leverage to not actually post earnings. So if you want to tax revenue, that's a separate issue, right? Because a lot of these companies aren't
profit,
even...
Yeah. Not revenue, profit, yeah.
Okay, that's a separate issue. But again, we have a difference of opinion here. I don't want to give the government any more of our money, and you do. And so we just disagree.
Okay. Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you. Yes.
Hey, Charlie, as a fellow Christian brother, I agree with a lot of Christian values you have, but I do have a dilemma. When a couple of days ago, Hamas calls for a ceasefire, they're reeling. I mean, they have no shot against the Israeli army. Is it biblical to reject the ceasefire, in your opinion? And I'm all for fortifying the Israeli border, as I also believe Israel's God's chosen people. So my question is it biblical to reject a ceasefire, because in the Sermon on the Mount, like you know, Jesus preaches, blessed are the peacemakers and pray for those who persecute you and love your enemies. So my thing is, like, maybe we should pull back to the border and just fortify the border and protect the Israeli people and, like, our Muslim brothers and sisters, like, give them a chance to, like,
great,
live.
Great question. The answer is it depends. It depends if it's actually a peace deal. And I don't know. The point is that Hamas says that they wanted to broker peace. What were the terms? Israel said they were totally unacceptable. We don't know. And if it turns out that Israel, and I'm willing to say this as someone who's pro-Israel, if they actually turned away a good deal, then they're in the wrong. But if they turned away a fake deal, which it probably was, because I don't trust Hamas at all because they're modern Nazis, almost assuredly it wasn't, then it is okay to turn away. Because just because it's called a peace deal doesn't actually mean it's a peace deal.
Do you know any, because I don't know much about the peace deal either. I was just here to ask you.
I know almost nothing about it.
Okay. Yeah. That's all I was going to ask. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. If you disagree, you guys can come to the front of the line. We're going to try to go to a couple more. We're already over time. Go ahead. Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm a liberal. I think that Joe Biden's policy in Ukraine has been very effective. And I want to know why you think it hasn't.
Okay. Effective for who?
Effective for the geopolitical interests of the United States.
Which are?
Which are to contain Russian and Chinese authoritarianism as well as their allies.
Okay, why is containing Russian authoritarianism a necessary geopolitical interest?
Because it is the United States' sole obligation to ensure and protect democracy, especially in Europe.
Oh, interesting. Where is that in the Constitution?
It's not in the Constitution.
Okay. Why is that a prime directive of the United States? Or, like, where do you get that from? Where is democracy, international affairs, why is that, like, super important?
Because it has been our ethos for decades, and it has proven effective for allowing us to...
Hold on, what if that ethos is not right?
It is right.
Tell me why.
Okay, I'll tell you why. Because through that ethos, we've been able to enable the creation of strong market economies in Eastern Europe but through the downfall of the Soviet Union, and by continuing to expand those market economies, we've increased the amount of consumer products available, raised the standard of living throughout the world, and have continued to spread democracy as well.
So just to be clear, you think Ukraine's a democracy?
I think that it will become a democracy with our help.
Got it. So when's the last time they held an election?
Before the war. But why 2018, don't they I think.
Yeah, why don't they hold one during the war?
Because it's pretty hard to have people voting in polling centers when they're having rockets.
Tell that to Abraham Lincoln, who held a war during the midst of the Civil War.
The states in the South did not vote during
that.
Maybe
they don't want to hold an election because Zelensky is not a legitimate leader of Ukraine, because our government displaced the old leader in the Maidan Revolution and installed Zelensky. So let's just go through this. I'm just morally, I want to make sure, because you made your position. If you had to choose, which is a preference or priority of Ukraine or the U.S. southern border, which one matters more?
The U.S. southern border.
Okay, I totally agree. Thank you for that moral clarity, and that's very good. So are you?
I do not think we have to choose.
Okay, but we have chosen, and we've chosen Ukraine.
We can choose both.
But we haven't. Why is that?
I think that Joe Biden has failed to adequately address the southern border.
Great. Thank you for your honesty on that. I agree. So I can move on from that. So what does success look like in Ukraine?
Success looks like fully repelling the Russian invasion, or at least stopping it, turning it into a meat grinder so that Russia is weakened for in perpetuity.
Does that include Crimea?
Not necessarily.
Okay, so you disagree with the Biden administration. That's fine, because they want Crimea to come back to Ukraine. So would you agree that it was wrong for the U.S. government to go into a meeting with Putin's auxiliaries in Istanbul and blow up a potential peace deal 10 days into the war, which we did?
Could you elaborate on what that
was? Yeah, people don't know this. 10 days into the war in Istanbul, Turkey, Tony Blinken and Boris Johnson went into a meeting with the Russian Federation, and there was a proposed peace deal on the table that would have given eastern Ukraine to Russia, part of it, and ended the war, and we blew that up. Was that the right decision?
Yes, because basically that's exactly what we allowed to happen with Crimea. We allowed them to invade. We did not encourage them to go to war over it, and basically just by allowing
But just to be clear, that is less of eastern Ukraine than Russia has now. So we basically rejected a deal. 100,000 Ukrainians died. Putin has pushed even further west, and that would have been a worse deal for Putin than what stands on the table now.
They would have just made more demands in the future. No matter what, Russia is going to roll into Ukraine.
Oh, okay, okay, fair enough. But they are going to roll into Ukraine? Why didn't they roll into Ukraine under Trump?
They were planning to do so. They rolled into Ukraine in 2014.
Well, hold on, no. Wait, they rolled under Obama, and they rolled under Biden, and they didn't under Trump.
Why? Trump was their chosen candidate for president.
But if they were chosen, then why didn't they take all of Ukraine?
Because they weren't prepared to invade in 2018, 2019, but they were in 2022.
Let's think about this. So when Trump was president, they didn't have missiles or tanks. If Trump was really their selected chosen candidate, they didn't advance their lands by one square inch, which is the stated goal of Vladimir Putin's whole presidency. So and by the way, what evidence do you have that he's their chosen candidate? Did you hear about the Russia investigation?
No, not the Russia investigation, but the multiple intelligence sources, all of our intelligence departments. Yeah,
Christopher Steele?
What?
Like Christopher Steele?
Sure, the Steele dossier, James Comey, all of them said
you're
that Russia
defend the
did
Steele
actively,
dossier? Okay, yeah.
They don't actively interfere on behalf of Donald Trump in the election. That's undisputed. I mean, sure.
It's the most disputed, most...
The collusion is disputed, but the fact that they interfered on behalf of Trump is obvious.
You mean maybe bots and farms and troll farms out of Moldova? Maybe?
Maybe, but it makes a difference if you have hundreds of thousands of fake accounts and even real accounts actually advocating for this person.
I'm just so enjoying this. So you really believe that the Russian Federation chose Donald Trump and helped them become president?
Yes, it's no different than calling the TikTok operation a psyop. It's no different.
Okay, well, let's just be very clear. Did Russia make Hillary Clinton not visit Wisconsin in the November of 2016?
I did not say that.
No, it's
she
it's,
made a it, bad decision.
It's such a laughable thing because I don't want to go too far in that direction. So success is to stop the meat grinder, yeah?
It's to at least grind down Russian forces. We do not want them to have a strong
military.
Oh, okay,
got it. So to have Ukrainians be human shields for us.
Because no matter what, they're going to roll further
and
further.
No, answer the question. So let's have more Ukrainian men die to slow down Russian forces so we can feel good about protecting democracy?
If it's not the Ukrainians, it will be the Poles, the Lithuanians, or the Germans. No matter what, people are going to die because of Russian aggression. So best to stop it as soon as possible.
Or we could have an exact opposite view, which is take eastern Ukraine. They want to be part of Russia.
They're just
going
to take more. They're going to take western Ukraine as soon as they get the chance.
First of all, what evidence do you have for that, that they're going to keep on taking
more? I mean, you can see Dmitry Medvedev standing up in front of a big screen with the giant map of Ukraine becoming Russia, and it's more than just eastern
Ukraine. Well, yeah, now they're saying that because of us, because we've antagonized them, and they've now turned their entire economy into a war machine. And you know what? They might actually take all of Ukraine because of us. And now 100,000 Ukrainians are dead because of us. So if it's about stopping the meat grinder, we, the American Foreign Policy Project, thanks to Joe Biden, we have more Ukrainians dead than we could ever comprehend, and over 2 million displaced. And for what? What can we show for it? We really showed Putin?
They do not control the entirety of the country or even the majority of it.
They control the eastern part far more than they would have got in the peace deal. And every day, eastern forces are marching west.
You already agree that they would have just demanded more eventually. They're going to just keep taking and taking and taking.
No, no, hold on a second. That's only if you have, I was going to use a certain word, a super weakling as president of the United States called Joe Biden. If you had a real president like Donald Trump, they wouldn't move a square inch into there. And again, you can try to spin all you want. Not a single person can come up here and answer the question, why didn't Putin invade when Trump was president? Oh, he wasn't ready? Give me a break. So he had his chosen president, and he wasn't ready? So Putin then invaded Biden when Biden was president, who was more outspokenly adversarial to him?
No matter what, Trump was going to weaken NATO. So maybe he's wanted to sit back while that happened. But he knew that he had to invade sooner rather than later if when Biden became president
but
was actually
again,
going
NATO
to defend.
Had more money under Trump than at any other time. I don't know what reality you're living under. NATO was stronger. There was less war.
It was not stronger. There was a significant strife within NATO, specifically because of Trump.
You know why? Oh, yeah. You know why there was strife? Because Germany actually had to pay into NATO for like the first time in 20 years as proportion to their GDP.
Sure.
And he went to the French and was like, you guys are underpaying. And went to the Dutch and was like, you guys are underpaying. And went to the Italians and said, you guys are underpaying. And Americans shouldn't have to disproportionately shoulder that burden. And so I just want to be clear. So success is just throw as many Ukrainian bodies at the meat grinder to slow down Putin so a lot of people unnecessarily die for what, like just to send a message for democracy?
I understand your soundbite, but I do believe that...
No, it's not a soundbite. It's a reality where now another 100,000 Ukrainian boys are going to die for our own pride.
It is
not
a
joke.
Our pride.
You want to talk about a genocide? That is more of an elimination of Ukrainian men than anything that's happening in Rafah right now.
And you think that that's our fault, that Russia is committing genocide in eastern
Ukraine?
Hold
on a second. Of course it's our fault. We blew up a peace deal, and we are funding this war unnecessarily. We have rejected peace deal after peace deal after peace deal, and we're the ones that are supplying munitions. We're the ones that are supplying cluster bombs. That's us.
That's wrong because they'd still be taking the children of Ukrainian parents and deporting them into farther into Russia to give them to the Russian parents, even if they had annexed it peacefully.
Last question. We've spent $200 billion on this so far. What is a number that we'd reach is too much?
Honestly, it's not really about what the number is. Obviously, if you're reaching into the trillions of dollars to fund this war, it probably isn't worth it.
We'll hit a trillion in 2 years. At that point, will you say enough is enough?
It's been 2 years, and we've only spent $200 billion. You're saying it's going to increase fivefold over the next 2 years?
Oh, that's $200 billion that we know of.
So the government is secretly spending more money than what's in the bills?
Yes.
The entirety of the country, government.
We have $750 billion Department of Defense budget, nearly $1 trillion every year. We don't know how much of that money is actually going to Ukraine.
Would you support cutting that defense budget?
Yeah, of course, but that's a separate issue.
Interesting.
But it's almost $1 trillion of a defense budget, okay? We don't know how much of air reconnaissance support, CIA. So what I'm getting at is that's $200 billion of just cash for Zelensky. We don't know how much of our other $6 trillion budget is being used to support him as an auxiliary. So look, I think America matters a lot more than Ukraine. I know you agree with that. And quite honestly, I think it's one of the great moral tragedies of our time that we're supposed to hate Russia so much that an entire generation of Ukrainian men are supposed to die for it.
Okay. I appreciate your
Thank you very much.
Thank
yep.
You.
Okay. One or two more, then I got to run.
Thank you for letting me disagree with you. I disagree with your stance of small government is better and that we should shrink many parts of our federal government. I think some of them should expand. So, for example, you're very adamant about your total abolition of abortion. It's a stance that I hold as well. However, with the revoking of Roe versus Wade, we see that the power has then been divested into the states, whereas I believe that we should have a federal abolition on abortion, that it is the life of a child should be a federally protected human being. And I was wondering if I could have your stance on it. I think we should also have, for example, federal increases in border security.
Yeah, I agree with both of those. Yeah, but we're nowhere near that on the abortion thing anytime soon.
Got it. Okay.
Just because of public opinion. It's nowhere near that.
Yeah. Yes. So.
But we agree.
Oh.
I believe in a small but strong federal government.
Got it. But you also mentioned that you want to decrease the federal defense budget.
Correct.
Does that not then weaken the federal government?
Not necessarily. I mean, it weakens part of the federal government, yeah. I mean, I don't think that we should be funding the Ukraine nonsense. I don't think we should have as many military bases as we have across the world. Not even close, yeah.
Got it. So then I'm just wondering, if the rhetoric is to divest into local solutions, why should we allow states such as California, Oregon, cities like Portland to run themselves into the ground without federal intervention?
Well, let's be clear. I mean, it's been a huge win to send it back to the states because beforehand, abortion was the law of the land as per the decision of Roe versus Wade. But eventually, I'd love to be able to build consensus and do something nationally, but we're not there yet. So,
got it.
All right, next question. We got to get to it. Thank you. All right, I think this is the last question. Yep, okay. Final question. Make it a good one.
So before I attack your position, I want to see if I can accurately restate it. So it sounded like you were espousing the position earlier that the idea of moral discernment is not built in or inherent. Is that a correct restatement?
We have some moral discernment, but most moral action, ethical action is taught and or transmission. Yes.
Do you believe that, I mean, aside from being taught, through listening or preaching, you can get that through praying or meditation if you were like an uncontacted tribe, right, or something like that. I had a very specific pointed question.
then go through it, yeah.
Yeah, so I think if you say that if you were not specifically taught from the Bible, you can't be a moral person.
I didn't say that. Yeah, I said that the Bible is the source of ultimate moral truth.
Okay, I just think it's very important to be precise because if you're not very clear about what you mean and someone's listening who doesn't understand the minutiae of a Christian dogma, they're going to think that you're absolving non-believers of their moral responsibility, and it makes salvation seem, to someone who's uninitiated into the idea of how universal Christianity is, it makes it seem like salvation is kind of a game of luck where if you're born in rural China and you can't get the teaching, you're kind of just out of luck.
Okay, so what's the question?
My question, I just wanted to clarify the point. If it sounds like you agree with me, I think we agree, so I won't vote.
All right, cool, man. Appreciate it. All right, I want to just say thank you guys for sitting through all that. I have an important announcement, though. There's a ton of Antifa out there that are wanting you guys to engage. Just ignore them. Go the other way. Please, we don't want to give them what they want. They've mobilized out there. They hate what we stand for. Thank you guys for so warmly receiving us. God bless you guys. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.